Kevin, you and your co-author, Jason Kaufman, have done a study that has a couple of findings, but one of them is particularly counterintuitive, which it turns out that tastes don't transfer from one friend to another.
That's absolutely right. And Jason and Marco Gonzalez and I found that on Facebook, at least, our preferences do not actually rub off on each other, rub off on us, contrary to many popular assumptions about peer influence and social contagion.
Did you find any influence among friends around tastes?
So with respect to the population we looked at, we actually examined 15 different clusters of tastes, five each in movies, music, and books. And across all those 15 different taste clusters, each of which roughly corresponds to a type of genre, we basically only found one instance of diffusion, and that was that if your friends like classical or jazz music, you're actually more likely to like classical jazz music yourself. But that was the only instance in which we found a case of social contagion.
So people who did not initially like classical jazz music ended up liking it more because of their friends? Is that the finding?
That's correct, right. So if my friends express a taste in classical jazz music, I am both more likely to adopt that taste in the future and more likely to maintain that taste if I already have it.
So how do you do a study like this?
Very carefully, it turns out, for a number of reasons. So this is absolutely a difficult question to address, which is why it's kind of a long-standing puzzle in social science. We've known for ages that friends tend to resemble one another, but we really haven't had an adequate answer for why, and whether that's do we tend to befriend people who are similar to us, or do we become more similar to our friends over time? Part of the reason this puzzle has been so difficult is that adequate data just haven't been available. In order to disentangle this issue, you need longitudinal data, first of all, to address issues of causality. And you need that longitudinal data on both social relationships as well as individual preferences. Additionally, it's methodologically just a really tough puzzle to address, and it's only really been in the past several years that really sophisticated methodological tools have been developed that we draw upon to answer this question. This is the stochastic actor-based modeling approach by Tom Snyders and colleagues.
Okay, so that was a little fast.
Okay, sorry.
can you explain what that model is?
Just that last part?
Yes. Sure. Starting with stochastic.
So the model is called the stochastic actor-based modeling. And what this is, it was introduced just in the past several years by Tom Snyders and colleagues. And this is basically the first tool that's been able to statistically adequately disentangle the two processes of selection and influence. So we've seen this tool introduced in a number of methodological papers, and it's increasingly common in social network analysis, but it hasn't really yet been applied certainly not to Facebook or to the issues of taste in general.
So how did you gather your data?
So the data collection began back in 2006, and we had permission to basically study just a single cohort of college students, which of course places restrictions on our generalizability. But we were able to basically take snapshots of this cohort's Facebook data once a year for 4 years, and so we were able to collect the students' Facebook friendships and also their tastes over 4 years, and so that's the basis for the study.
And what sort of spread of users and did you have? Facebook is already to some degree a self-selected group, although at this point it's a pretty broadly self-selected group.
Right. It feels almost universal at this point. So we were very fortunate in that the college that we were studying actually had a very high early adoption rate on Facebook. And so even in 2006, the students' freshman year, when we began our research, there was already more than 97% of the population had a Facebook account. Now, many of those students, of course, had private profiles, and the incidence of privacy settings increased over time. And so at the end of the day, the models for the paper that we just wrote are focused only on those students for whom both relational and taste data were available at all 4 years.
And, of course, it is limited to college students who are on the Internet, thus have a certain level of affluence and some similarity. So,
right. So college students on the Internet at this one particular college, which is absolutely important to keep in mind and not to generalize from too far. But at the same time, this is absolutely rare and valuable opportunity, we think, and we believe it can shed insight onto broader social dynamics.
So the question of whether we – whether our friends are like us because we select friends who are like us, or because we become like our friends, or both. Mm-hmm. How does this, in terms of this research, what's the best answer we have to that question now?
So this research would suggest that absolutely the best answer is that we become friends with people who are similar to us. And so we found that while the diffusion of taste is actually rather rare, tastes do play a significant role in the formation and maintenance of friendships. And that is, students who share certain types of tastes are absolutely more likely to become friends. In particular, students who liked also classical music or liked or classic rock music, and students who liked movies that we called the raunchy comedy gore genre, or dark satire were the two genres that we kind of found do foster friendships. At the same time, we also found that a number of other properties, number of other dynamics foster friendship evolution that don't have to do with taste at all. And many of these findings absolutely coincide with what network researchers have known for a long time using more traditional data sets, such as students from a similar socioeconomic or racial background tend to become friends, as do students who, of course, live in the same dorm building and share friends in common.
In your study, there was one genre that didn't work the way the others did.
Absolutely. So this was a very striking and surprising finding to us, given the literature on diffusion, is that we actually found one case of peer influence operating in the opposite direction. And so in the case of indie and alternative music, it's actually the case that if your friends like indie alternative bands, you're actually less likely to adopt those tastes yourself, or more likely to discard them. Our interpretation of this finding is basically that part of the social meaning of expressing an indie or alternative taste is actually being the only one who expresses it. So it's not just that I like Belle and Sebastian, for instance, but I'm the only one in my friendship circle who holds that taste. And so if someone else adopts the same preference, this takes away some of my cultural distinctiveness and makes the taste less attractive to me personally.
Now, the social importance of being interesting. So other than tastes, was there any other transmission, or did you look at any other things that might be transmitted among friends?
Sure. So in this study, we looked exclusively at students' favorites, and only in music, movies, and books. I realized Facebook has evolved a lot since then, and there are many other types of things one could study now. We were fortunate that for the 4 years we studied Facebook, those features were constant, that where students could always report their favorite music, movies, and books. Since our findings are limited to those three domains, that said, those three domains are of high interest to a lot of people, both in and outside of academia.
But activities, social activities, might be another area of study to see whether people are doing new things because their friends are doing things they otherwise wouldn't have done.
Certainly. And in fact, I think moving forward, Facebook is in some ways the ideal platform to explore further questions of diffusion, not just behaviors, but of course ideas, as well as other types of preferences, the ability to basically share content online these days and comment on it is really a unique data opportunity that very few people to date have actually taken advantage of.
So would this methodological technique, could it be deployed to help us answer some of the questions that get known as bunched together under the rubric of the echo chamber issue?
The echo chamber. You have to...
Okay. So the concern, and for which there is some evidence, that when people are given a wide variety of ideas to spend time with, things to read, as they are on the net, of course, that in general people will tend to read that with which they already agree, and not only will it further confirm them in their beliefs, but will drive them into further polarized, extremed views of those beliefs.
Sure, which, is basically exactly what we find, right, that students tend to seek out others who are like them rather than, change their preferences in accordance with their friends. And I would say this modeling tool is absolutely equipped to address those types of questions. It, of course, has its limitations and assumptions like any modeling tool, but it comes in a long line of research that has tried to address this question using alternative methods, which have at times been shown to be severely limited and produce findings that may have been distorted. distorted, basically. And so this is really a tremendous methodological advance for which, you know, we, the co-authors of the study, can take personally no credit. We're really taking this, you know, super sophisticated modeling tool that others have developed and applied it to our own unique data set.
Kevin, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, David. Thank you.